Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that's the last refuge of a scoundrel. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hi, Corey.
In this mini-episode, is it unpatriotic to talk about Brexit? Right, Steve, why are we having to talk about this?
So, there's been an interesting little development in the discourse surrounding Brexit. There have been certain leading Brexiteers, the likes of Andrea Leadsom, for instance, who have critiqued the press and the media for not being patriotic enough in terms of its coverage of Brexit. The idea being that by being critical of the government and being critical of the Brexit process and the way that the government is going about things, this in and of itself is unpatriotic. This is somehow damaging to the the Brexit negotiation process. And the reason we're bringing this up now is because during the past week or so, I noticed that Tim Montgomery, the former editor of Conservative Home and former Times columnist, who's currently setting up a new website called Unheard.
It's a kind of cow social media network.
Yeah, pretty much. He posted something on Twitter where he basically said, "I'm beginning to agree with Andrea Leadsom that the BBC's unpatriotic coverage of Brexit is going to cause problems." I mean, I paraphrase there somewhat. I can't remember the exact wording. But the general gist of it being that, you know, the BBC was being unpatriotic in the way it was covering reporting on Brexit, which I felt is worth us kind of having a bit of a discussion on. Because, one, it's bullshit. Excuse the language. But, two, it's very much is kind of giving into, as you said at the top of the podcast, the notion that patriotism is the last refuge of the scoundrel. If you are sat there and accusing people of who are critiquing you of being unpatriotic, you've lost that argument already, almost. One of the things that I found interesting was that when people challenged Tim Montgomery on this, his actual kind of core point was that he thought that the BBC or whichever coverage of Brexit in that instance was unbalanced, biased against Brexit, accusing the BBC or media, the media in general, of being biased, whether it be to the left or to the right, is not a new thing. And, you know, that's a debate that can be had time and time again, and, you know, there's valid points on both sides, actually. But that is a very different argument to saying that the coverage is unpatriotic. And the fact that we are kind of going down that route of describing critique being unpatriotic is something that's worth paying attention to. And it's also worth kind of explaining as to why people are right to get annoyed when Andrea Leadsom or Tim Montgomery actually start talking about being unpatriotic as though.
So the story itself was about British business leaving for Paris, wasn't it? The French government is trying to poach British business, and this is something Macron was talking about in the presidential campaign as well. Now, in that instance, all the BBC are doing is reporting facts. Reporting facts in and of itself is not unpatriotic. I mean, to paraphrase Stephen Colbert, if reality has an unpatriotic bias, then there's not much the BBC can do to not report that.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the problem. It very much feels like that a lot of the right wing, especially, and the very much the Brexit wing of the country, are trying to squash down any form of dissent or critique by kind of relying on this kind of call for patriotism, because to be a patriot is the ultimate kind of thing that any individual can be. And again, maybe there's some interesting stuff about definitions about what people actually consider to be patriotic, because I can almost guarantee you that I think there would be very, very different definitions on the left and the right.
I think possibly it reminds me of, again, when inconvenient facts, say, about the economy come up. It's an argument you see often in America, I think, when the argument that will often be used is that you're talking the economy down. So it's this idea that if the media reports facts about the economy that are detrimental to it, that might lead to some sort of downturn because
that people respond to the news and the media reports of it. And again, you can see that with Brexit as well, where talking Britain down has become a bit of a refrain. Like, you can't discuss the fact that, you know, actually, whilst a number of kind of economic kind of formulations and news that has come out since the referendum have been positive and better than actually a lot of people on the Remain side would have thought, there are still negatives coming out on the economy. But the minute you mention those, some randomer on Twitter turns around and says, "Oh, you're talking Britain down. You're just bemoaning."
And I think on the Remain side, and I think both of us are probably more Remain side than Brexit side, it's the difference between AC Grayling and Ian Dunt, because Ian Dunt on the RemainX podcast, which is very, very good, and Peter Collins on that as well, they're very, very careful about always saying, well, Remainers can't just jump on every piece of bad news in, say, a way that AC Grayling does in a slightly unhinged way. It is about trying to pick your stories, pick your battles, and see. And I think the problem with Brexit and the problems the government have on Brexit is they are entirely of the government's own making.
And that's the thing. And again, going back to the refuge of the scoundrel, it's the fact that for an awful lot of people, it's very clear that so many of the failings of Brexit that we're seeing so far are of the government's own making. No one forced the government to call an election, which they then lost, wasting months and months of time.
No one,
negotiations.
Yeah, and no one forced Theresa May to trigger Article 50 in March when no plan had been made on any preparation for Britain's relationship with the EU. There were no position papers that had been come out. It could have been perfectly possible for David Davis or Theresa May to come out and say, before we trigger Article 50,
we're going to have this in place.
Yeah, here is our offer to the EU on EU citizens. Let's get that out of the way before negotiations start.
Yep.
Let's think about what we want the divorce bill to be before we trigger Article 50, and then negotiations can start. One of the main cards we have in our hand was when we trigger Article 50, and we chose a period, as we've talked about on the podcast, where even without the unnecessary election that may trigger, there was a French election coming up, there was a German election coming up, dead space of summer coming up where negotiations weren't going to happen.
Yeah, the thing is, Theresa May could have just said, we will trigger Article 50 before the end of the year. And people would have probably been happy about that. It was only because they were just desperate to get some headlines and try and focus the attention on other things that they just decided to trigger it early. And again, it goes back to this notion of people trying to hide things behind this kind of call for being unpatriotic. It's literally just down to the fact that they're trying to move attention elsewhere because they know they're screwing up in some ways.
Well, and also it's that unpatriotic or somehow you're subverting the will of the people. Mm-hmm. When, as we've talked about, what does it mean? And actually, an interesting thing that a lot of the UKippers and Tory hard Brexiters are saying is, well, either you're in the EU or you're not, which is just demonstrably not true, because you've got countries in EFTA who are not in the EU, like Switzerland, but can still have single market access. You've got countries in the EEA, like Norway, which have single market access but are not in the EU. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you've got Vote Leave staffers, like I think Oliver Norgrave is a good example, who are trying to campaign for Britain to be in EFTA. And I think there is that sensible wing of Brexiters which is getting very, very alarmed with what is going on and probably want Britain to be part of EFTA or the EEA. And if I'm perfectly honest, I would rather have a soft Brexit than a hard Remain. I would rather Britain be part of EEA than be in the EU with the euro.
Absolutely. The notion that you can just ignore the referendum result and just go straight back in is completely farcical. That is actually how you do genuinely undermine people's trust in democracy. And that's how you end up with fascists rising to power and actually gaining a foothold in this country. I suspect that every single person who's listening to this probably doesn't want that to happen. We need to leave, but it's a case of what is the best option for us to leave. And I think for an awful lot of Remainers, they've lost sight of that. The AC Graylings who just desperate to go back into the EU. Well, that's not going to happen.
Ian Dunt's Brexit book, Brexit, What the Hell Happens Now? I mean, one of the points that he makes, which I think is very, very reasonable, is that none of the problems that Britain is facing are as a result of Brexit. The problems are as a result of how the government is handling Brexit. Yeah. And I think that is the key thing.
But again, to critique is to be unpatriotic.
Well, quite. There is the other question of balance on the BBC. Now, mm-hmm. I, unlike you, subject myself to the Today programme in the mornings as I shave and have my shredded wheat. And I think the Today programme does have a particular... I mean, the Today programme almost embodies the BBC's issue with balance because, I mean, for a start, overrated interviewers like John Humphreys, who yeah. just... rudeness becomes a kind of technique. It's that devil's advocate position they have, that almost the way that they show balance is they will interview someone from who is a leaver and they will put all the remainer arguments to them, and then they'll interview someone who is a remainer and put all the leave arguments to them, and because they're doing a devil's advocate thing and because they're showing both sides, that is somehow giving balance.
Mm-hmm. And which, in a number of ways, ends up actually being given credence to positions which, to be quite honest, shouldn't be given positions. Classic case in point, every time, is it Nigel Lawson who ends up being invited on to talk about climate change? Nigel Lawson is not an environmental scientist in any form, and yet he has become one of the go-tos, because every time they talk about climate change, they feel like they need to bring on somebody who doesn't believe in climate change. That's not balance, that's just completely obscene. Every time we talk about the Earth being round, we don't bring on a flat earther. Science is science is science. And the BBC, certainly in this sort of area, need to actually get with the times and realise that just because somebody disagrees with it doesn't mean that you need to interview them for balance.
Nick Davis in Flat Earth News put it quite well, where he says, well, say today is Tuesday, you can't just have someone... who saying, well, arguing today is Tuesday, and then someone arguing that today is Thursday, and say, ah, here we go, we have a balanced interview. Just as you can't just say that democracy is one vote on June the 23rd in which 52% of people voted leave, because what exactly they were voting for is not entirely certain. And also, the point of politics is you have to take account of the views of the 48% as well and come to some sort of compromise.
Yep.
And all these nuanced questions just get ignored, and I think the media has a little bit of a role for that, because again, the problem, and especially it's the problem the Today programme has, is that everything is done in very short 2 or 3 minute sections in which you can't explain anything about the EU in 2 or 3 minutes, which is in many ways a bit of a problem about it, but you can't explain EFTA or the role of the EEA in 2 minutes.
Yeah, and again, it's boils down to the fact that the way that people consume their media and consume their news, we do it in these bite-sized chunks. We do it by when we're listening to the Today programme in the morning, or we're listening to Eddie Mayer on PM on the way home. Now, Eddie Mayer, actually PM, I think is a hell of a lot better than Today, because Mayer, one, is one of their most underrated journalists, in my opinion.
Not by Boris Johnson.
Not by Boris Johnson, no. But he is very, very good at kind of being forensic and getting into the details of an issue. He puts the opposing view there, but he, often than not, interrogates the view that the individual actually puts forward. And that's what I think is missing on a lot of kind of the Today programme and on an awful lot of political interviews. It's that kind of just interrogation of that person's point of view. The sort of thing which really you have to do as a basic kind of level political science question. There is a genuine danger that the more kind of like the BBC actually goes down the route that it currently is with a lot of its coverage on political issues, more and more people are just going to get disenfranchised with it. And, you know, suddenly that argument for keeping the licence fee is going to vanish, because you're going to have right-wingers who just don't like the BBC in general and resent paying the licence fee being able to ally up with various aspects of the left who dislike the way that the BBC handles left-wing issues.
Yes, or dislike Laura Koonsberg because sexism.
Yeah.
And I think if that happens and the BBC does disappear, then you do have a problem, because you see in America what happens if you essentially have a cable news network where fact-free opinions are put out unchallenged, and it happens with Fox News, and there you have a very, very toxic feedback loop of Fox and the White House and the president, and
yeah, it's just not a nice situation to be in. And one of the beautiful things about the UK is actually that even our right wingers look at what Fox News and the Republicans do and they just disown it, because they just find it completely unpalatable. And
you know, it's not to say some of them don't agree with it, Philip Davies, but an awful lot of them do genuinely find it disgusting the way that what the Republicans and the way Fox News go about doing things.
So, we're going to be talking about Brexit for a second time this week, because
Hooray.
Theresa May is going to give a speech in Florence. I would choose Florence to go to, actually, for a speech as well. It's a lovely city. If Theresa May wants to send us a message on our Facebook page, facebook.com/notlessofchampagne, we can recommend some restaurants in Florence you can go to.
Yeah, absolutely. And if she also wants to follow us on Twitter, she can follow me on @CentreRadical.
And I'm @PaperbackWriter.
And if she really, really wants to, she wants a jaunty little theme tune, she can contact, what's his name again?
His name is Dave Depper.
Yeah, Dave Depper, for Plucky Good Times, as the song is called. And if she wants a nifty little logo design, she can talk to James Cram.
Happy plotting, everyone.